about him. The show's all about it. Melbourne, won't you shout it? We're gonna tell you all about it.
Your host,
Matthew Bronson.
Welcome. This is Conversations with Matthew Bronson on KUPR 99.9 FM, Placitas, New Mexico. So for today, our conversation is about cougars and bears and all those things that we live with. Rick is here with us. He is a, tell me if I get this correct, Rick, a large animal biologist.
Bear and cougar biologist.
So you specialize. Why didn't you just go for the cougar or the bear? Why? Or is
You know, both animals are, in a lot of ways, management-wise, are similarly managed. Both because they potentially create issues with humans and because they do a lot of similar things on the landscapes. Even though a bear is an omnivore and a cougar is an obligate carnivore, both...
What kind of carnivore?
Obligate carnivore. They don't eat anything but meat. They can't eat grass, for instance, whereas a bear will eat pretty much anything, including a lot of grass.
I want to be that meat-only guy.
Steak's delicious.
I know, isn't it? So you work for the state of New Mexico.
Yep.
You are educated in all this. You're not a guy who's done this a lot.
Right.
And because Placitas is, we all call it home, but this is really in a different environment than Knob Hill.
Correct.
As far as cohabitating or interacting with animals for fun and sport. But you're also involved in the harvesting of animals, managing population. So we're going to cover all of that.
Great.
From your experience, is there some place you want to start that so I don't have to think about questions? You can just answer them all before I even ask them?
Well, when you originally set up the interview, we talked about the important things for people who live in an area like Placitas, which is basically at the base of a bunch of really good wildlife habitat in the Sandia Mountains. And in between where bears and other species might be going when drought conditions are high or when they may be moving out of the mountains, like young animals dispersing to other places. So basically Placitas is right in the way of that kind of movement. And how do people living in these areas cohabitate with bears, mountain lions, even the deer and the bunnies and things like that that are a constant thing?
Can I have the option of not interacting with them?
Yeah. And that's part of the whole thing is the way to deal with or to live comfortably with wildlife is if you want to see them, there's a certain level of comfort that people have versus a person who wants to avoid them completely. If you don't provide them anything that... Your land is completely xeriscaped, and it's filled with rocks, and there's no plants, and there's no water, and there's no attractants. You're not going to have wildlife around other than a lizard or two and some ants. However, if you have a nicely landscaped yard with a bunch of delicious non-native plants that the deer and the bunnies and everything eat.
Some nice berries.
Yes,
and
berries
lettuce.
And lettuce and rose bushes. Deer love rose bushes. If you attract the deer.
Do you hear that, Audrey? No rose bushes.
Yeah, if you attract the deer and the rabbits and the mice, you're also going to get what eats them. And what eats them being coyotes, bobcats, mountain lions, and bears. And bears will eat anything. So almost anything can attract bears.
Are all of these wildlife things are they all night hunters, nocturnal?
No, not at all.
I knew that.
A lot of them are primarily nocturnal, but that's mostly because of human activity. It's not because of that's the natural way for a lot of these creatures. All of them will hunt day or night, and they're very opportunistic in that case.
The reason I ask that is because, and this could be, an old wives' tale or something, but I was always told growing up, if you see a raccoon during the day, it's probably rabbit.
In the case of raccoons or skunks, that's very true.
Okay.
We already learned
something.
they're not naturally animals that are out in the day. There are natural nocturnal animals. A lot of the predators are not. However, there's peaks in activity for all animals, and those crepuscular times, those times when it's in between night and day, are times when a lot of wildlife is very active. They can remain somewhat hidden while going about their business. They can move without being exposed.
When wildlife is active, does that mean they're on the hunt?
Or, it, you know...
They're not going for a Sunday stroll.
Right, exactly. On the hunt or moving for whatever reason. Like a deer is going to move from a daytime bedding area to a nighttime feeding area or a daytime feeding area. A bear... at this time of year is moving a lot. There's not a lot of food, and so bears move around a lot, rolling over rocks, rolling, you know, tearing apart logs, eating insects, eating green grass or whatever they can find. A mountain lion is going to move when its prey is moving. They eat deer, they're going to move when the deer's moving.
The reason I ask that, and I know it's sometimes it's hard to believe for people who listen to the program regularly, but there is a method to the madness here. So if I'm out just walking my dog, mm-hmm. surveying... you know, Bronson Land, and I see, let's start big, a bear or a deer or a coyote. Do I need to be fearful, or are they just off doing their thing and they could care less about me?
As a general rule, they yes. could care less about you. All wildlife is sort of has a natural fear of humans. I tell people...
Word's gotten around, huh?
Yeah, it's a good idea. Be scared. Be very scared. There's, you know, very, very rare situations in which case you could run across any wildlife species that could be aggressive. That could be disease. It could be because you surprised it. If you surprise a deer and you're 2 feet away from it, you're probably getting kicked.
Okay.
It's going to kick you and then run away. And you don't want to get kicked by a big mule deer.
Right. But whereas with a bear... they may stay after that first kick.
As a general rule, no. If you defensive situations with bears, they generally, you know, they're going to give you a nibble, a pretty hard nibble, and they're going to knock you over and run you over.
Didn't need that arm.
Yeah. And you know, they'll sort of run you over on the way to getting out.
Okay.
Now, there are very rare occasions when a bear will make a predatory attack. These are very rare and so rare that you are much more likely to get hit by lightning while you're fishing that once every 10 years that you went fishing.
After I've won lotto twice.
After you've won the lotto twice. Yes, that's the kind of rarity we're looking at. More people win the lottery every year than are attacked by bears. So,
well, if I had a choice, I know which way I'd go.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure which one I want to.
Well, from your studies and your work history here, you know, for fishing game, do you know Placitas well enough to know that XYZ community is going to have more bears than ABC community, or they just are bears and mule deer just so free range that it changes from year to year?
Well, both are correct. You know, if we have drought situations or we have food failures, one of the things that causes a food failure for bears in particular is if we have late frosts, the blossoms of the oak trees die and they don't produce acorns that year. If there's no acorns, there's less fall food supply for bears, and that's when we tend to see an upswing in bear problems in communities. Placitas, being right at the base of the mountains, fairly frequently has a lot of bear problems, and I've caught a lot of bears in Placitas and moved bears out of Placitas, and I've even euthanized bears out that came from Placitas.
Is being north or south of 165 make any difference?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. We're right at the base of the mountains throughout the greater Placitas area, and a bear could show up anywhere.
So when you come upon a bear, or a human, a resident comes upon a bear, well, let me ask that a different way. Am I going to come upon a bear, or is a bear going to come upon me?
More likely, a bear is going to come upon you. We have moved into the bear's place versus the bear moving into our place.
Right.
So if a bear is moving across the landscape and happens by your place, your property or whatever, it while moving through will come across. Generally, it's going to keep going. Occasionally, it's going to stay. If you have a really stinky garbage out or something like that, bear is it lives by its nose.
My garbage smells like perfume, Rick. It is the
yeah,
best in town.
Right, I bet it does. A bear has such an acute sense of smell that it lives by its nose in a very different way than we do. We barely smell anything. A bear follows his nose pretty much wherever it goes.
More so than a mule deer?
Mule deer, you know, they have a very acute sense of smell, but nothing compared to a bear. Mm. And they are more sight inclined. They look at
the food. Deer.
Yeah. More? You know, they can smell it and they can decide, well, I want to eat this shrub.
Right.
Versus a bear, which it can smell literally from the top of the sandias. If there's ripe apricots and placidas, it knows there's ripe apricots and placidas.
We're going to Paul's house tonight for dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
The what about the old cliche or the barometer of smell is a dog.
Right.
So how does a bear compare to a dog smell-wise or sense of smell?
A bloodhound is one of the dogs with the most sensitive nose, so to speak. A bear is seven times more sensitive than that.
More
sensitive than a – seven times. So we're talking almost an order of magnitude. If a bloodhound's nose is 100 times better than ours, a bear's nose is 7,000 times better than ours.
Right.
So
I am not familiar with bear or dog biology, but I've often heard that some animals, like dogs, they devote so much of their brain space, you know, to their nasal passages and smelling and all that, they had to sacrifice their brain. How does that?
There's some truth to that.
Okay.
You know, your Labrador Retriever, everybody's familiar with the lab, they're pretty dumb.
Yeah, but lovable.
Lovable dogs, but they're sort of one track. But think
except
about
all the Labradors and Placidus. They're all very, very smart.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, think about when you take your dog for a walk. It smells everything. You can see him constantly moving his nose around,
yeah,
sniffing. They got to stop and sniff every bush that another dog may have peed on or something like that. And it's hard to get them away from some of those smells because they're so interesting. And that's how the dog thinks. It's totally attracted by the nose. And whether it's food or a mate or anything like that is going to be very attractive to them.
Identification of who was here last.
Exactly.
I'm so glad that we have not adopted that behavior. And are bears like dogs that even though they have these incredible senses of smell, that they have to put their snout within a millimeter of it? And I'm at the end of the leash and I can smell it. Are bears like that?
Well, they're even more so than a dog. Now they don't necessarily get into it because their nose is that much more acute. They can smell things a lot better than a dog can. And if it doesn't smell like food, they're interested in okay, a dog's peed here. This is interesting to a bear because a dog may represent something dangerous,
right,
something to avoid. Whereas if it smells like apple pie, they're going to be very interested. A bear is they're usually solitary, except a female with young. Bears are solitary most of the time. During a mating period, they may be interested. And in that case, the male bear smelling pee from a female that's in heat, so to speak,
right,
that's going to be very interesting to him, of course.
Oh,
and
yeah,
he's going to go look for that female and literally smell her up.
Is it a less fortuitous time for me to encounter that bear when he's looking for love?
I wouldn't say so, as a general rule. When he's looking for love, that's his main priority.
I'm not on that particular food chain.
Yeah, that part of the food chain is one we want to stay away from. Yeah.
All right, so for whatever reason, I'm out walking the dog or just taking the garbage down or pulling weeds out of the garden, and there is bear-human eye contact. What is... Is there one thing to do, or are there several choices I have?
The best thing to do is to make sure that the bear is aware of you. Their eyesight, people think bears have bad eyesight. It's comparable with ours. It's very good. It's better at night.
Their eyesight doesn't improve at night, but it's better than ours at night.
It's better than ours at night,
okay,
exactly. The best thing to do in a situation like that would be to just get the bear's attention. Hey, bear, you know, whatever, yeah, you want to say. And then you don't want to run away. People, you get startled and you might want to run. Bears are predators. They're built on a carnivore base, even though they're mostly an omnivore and that 90% of what they eat is plant matter. They might, if you run from it, you might spur it on to a predatory reaction. It might chase.
So when you're saying, hey, bear.
You're just getting its attention.
But I want to make eye contact with this thing?
Eye contact is in in the animal world can be considered aggression. So look at it, you know it's there, and then back away slowly.
I can know it's there, Rick, without letting it know I'm there.
And if it's far enough away that it's not going to be a problem, I just enjoy the sight you got because it's not every day you see it.
Right.
And it's and you know, our wildlife is beautiful, and it's wonderful that we live in a place that has so much. So I think it should be enjoyed.
Well, and I would think that's part of the either the attraction or the price of admission of living in Placidus.
Exactly.
All right, so I don't need to scoop up my puppy and run for cover.
Not necessarily. I do, however, always encourage that everybody keep their dog on a leash. A, it's the law, unless you're in a fenced area on your own property. And B, dogs have this wonderful habit, or poor habit, depending on how you define it. They go after things like bears. They run after them because they're every
it's
dog.
Fun.
It's fun, and it's going to run away probably 99% of the time. However, if it's a mama bear with cubs and your dog runs over to it to scare it away, mama bear is going to feel that your dog is a danger to its cubs, and she's going to chase the dog.
So it's time to go dog shopping.
The dog is probably coming back to you, and guess who he brings?
The bears. Look what I got, mommy and daddy.
Or pick me up and save me from the giant dog, because a dog looks at a bear as another big dog.
And speaking of, let's stay on the dog track for a second. If you have one of these smaller dogs, which seem to be more and more popular.
The yappy little things?
Yes. Well, some people call them cats that bark.
Yes.
But some people adore them, so we have to embrace everybody. But I have been told, even if you have a fenced-in area that you mentioned, don't leave the dog out there unattended.
No, certainly not, in particularly in an area. Okay, well, as a a wildlife professional, we refer to an area like Placidus where your smallest lots are about an acre. Your biggest ones might be 10, 15, 20 acres. We call this the wildland-urban interface, or WUI, if you want to shorten it.
Okay. We need an acronym.
Yeah. But in areas like this, where you have these dispersed developments, we humans being on the landscape create a habitat that is more rich than the natural habitat here. We do landscaping. We provide water features. We plant stuff that's good to eat for one reason or another. And so we attract a lot more smaller predators like bobcats and coyotes and foxes and things like that. Bobcats and coyotes will eat your little dog. And also, mountain lions will really, really eat your little dog. It's a snack.
Okay. I've heard tales of owls absconding with...
Owls, the great horned owls, which are common in the area, are large enough to pull your chihuahua away, and that's probably good.
Okay.
That's my personal opinion.
You said we weren't going to get controversial, Rick. I see the phones lighting up now. We have so many animals to cover, but let's stay with the bear for a minute, because a lot of us do like to garden or landscape, and regardless of the fact that there's no water here, some people do put in water features. What's the worst thing I can do as a homeowner or gardener as far as inviting bears and animals to come visit me?
All right. This is...
Oh, he's ready for this.
Yeah, it's a difficult question. Okay. I have to be honest with you. Fruit trees are great. They're very popular in Placidus. There are people that have been living in Placidus for 400 years, and there is a pear tree up in the old town portion of Placidus that has got to be 300 years old.
The villages area?
Oh, yeah, in the village, in the traditional village up there. There's a peat or a pear tree that is, it's got to be, it's huge, and it makes a ton of pears. On those years when we don't get a frost.
Right.
But you're going to have fruit trees. We always encourage people to pick fruit as it ripens. As soon as fruit is ripe, it starts to put off gases. And those gases are very attractive to a bear because the bear can digest ripe fruit, whereas when fruit is not ripe, it can't digest it as efficiently. If it's the only thing to eat, it's going to eat that. But if it's ripe, it's very digestible. And that's the time of year when bears are trying to fatten up for the next winter.
Right.
So ripe fruit left on the ground is one of the worst things you can do. Garbage is your first big problem. Bird seed, most people don't realize, is a huge problem for bears and is one of the big attractants. And it's oftentimes the first thing that attracts a bear. It finds bird seed and says, hey, that was great. I just got a 6,000-calorie meal in 5 minutes.
Sure.
By tearing down a bird feeder.
What about the sugar water?
The hummingbird feeder, same way. It's highly caloric.
That's a bear, right?
Yeah, it's bear soda pop. you know, and it gives them the same benefit. They drink that half a gallon of sugar water, and it's just as good for them as it is for us, other than the fact that for them, all of those instant calories are easy to assimilate, and for us, it just makes us fat.
Well, how invested are they in my apricots or my hummingbird water? Will they go over a 4-foot wall?
Oh, definitely.
I need razor wire and claymore mines?
No, I wouldn't say to go that far. But, you know, the big problem with bears is that they're always looking for the next meal. Bears are intelligent. They're very much more intelligent than your dog. They remember where the last meal was gotten, and they remember in the context of the time of year. Last year I was here and I found this good food here. They'll come back to the same area the next year looking for the similar source of food.
If it's next
year at the same time, if it's a natural source of food, that's one thing. If it's your apricot tree, for instance, that happened to produce fruit last year and they got lucky and found the fruit, they may come back looking for the same kind of thing. So human provided food is bad because it makes the bear associate humans with food. They become habituated to human food resources, and then they lose their fear of humans. As they lose their fear of humans, they can become dangerous because they become insistent upon taking that food resource, whether it be garbage, bird seed, hummingbird feeder, your ripe apricots.
Do we have any radicalized bears in Placidus yet?
You know, it's been a couple quiet years because we've had really good natural food resources, and that's one of the big things. Bear doesn't want to come to town. If there's lots of food on the mountain, it's going to stay on the mountain for the most part. If we go through a drought period, and it's inevitable eventually to go into another drought, with a lot of good breeding opportunities over the last 3 or 4 years or a couple years of good water and good moisture in the mountains, good snowfall and good natural forage production, bears, the population goes up. It goes up slowly, but it does go up. And when things dry out again, all of a sudden there's not enough food on the mountain for the bears that are there.
Now, Rick, you had said that bears are pretty much solitary, except when it's
mating season and with sows with females.
So if I have some kind of tasty, tasty treat on my land, you know, I'm growing apricots, I'm growing peaches, whatever, bears, and a bear comes. Does that mean that other bears are coming?
Potentially. On one of those really dry years, yeah, that can happen.
Right. But it's not like if you see one cockroach, you're going to see 1,000.
No, it's not like that. But on one of those really dry years, if one bear can, up on the top of the ridge up here, can smell your apricots or your peaches, another bear can too, and there's plenty of bears up there.
But will the other bear not come because I have my own bear?
Not necessarily. Bears are solitary. It's not sharing. They're fairly tolerant of each other.
Okay.
On an abundant food resource, they can be pretty tolerant. So you're not going to generally have a male bear that's just going to sit there and guard the tree, scaring other stuff away. Although that happens to a lesser extent.
All right. So since they're feeding solitarily, they're by themselves, do they have more sense than me? They know when they're full and then they're done. So like, I guess my question is, if a bear will eat a half of a peach tree harvest, can I just plant 2 peach trees and one for them and one for me?
No, it doesn't work quite that way.
Darn.
Because what we like to say is basically you want to pick that peach. Peaches take a couple of days to ripen. They actually ripen better off the tree after when they're almost just about perfect. Take them off the tree. Let them ripen somewhere else, because when they ripen all the way on the tree, all of a sudden they're producing all those delicious smelling ripe gases, and they become more attractive to a bear.
Do they snack and then go back and back, or are they just going to eat whatever they can and then go away?
They in the period that we call hyperphagia, which sort of starts in late summer and goes until they hibernate, they can eat up to 20,000 calories a day. An abundant food resource.
I'm so jealous.
They will eat until they're full. Go take a nap and then come back and eat some more.
All right. So it's like Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, pretty much. They wear their fat pants that day.
All right. Cool. All right. We've covered bears pretty much, right?
Yeah, unless you come up with more questions.
Yes, sir. We have a question. Oh, you're All right. Thank God we can edit this. Elk. That seems to be another high. We have a lot of elk around here.
We actually no. The Sandia Mountains.
That's what I meant. We don't have any.
Yeah, we have very few. The Sandias don't really have a much of any elk population.
But then I like it here. But what's their problem?
Yeah, you know, there's not a lot of big open areas. Elk like open areas to graze in, and the Sandias are just very, very full of forested areas,
right,
and brushy areas, and elk, that's not where they do best.
Right, so then we're kind of down to bobcats,
well,
coyotes.
Mule deer. We have a lot of mule deer
on
the Sandias, and then all those smaller critters. Lots of rabbits, lots of bobcats, lots of coyotes.
Would I, as unfamiliar with big game like this, would I be able to go, that's not an elk, that's a mule deer?
I would hope so, but okay. I know better than that also.
Okay. You know I'm not that bright.
It's not you. It's a lot of people.
Do they look alike?
Not really. There's some different characteristics. You know, a mule deer is about a quarter the size an elk in the first place.
So if someone pointed it out once, I would then know.
I would hope so, but you can't always trust that. They're a little bit different colored. They have different.
I'm not sure if Rick is insulting me or not. We just met.
I'm not trying to.
Okay.
But it's the kind of thing that you understand it and you know it immediately after looking at them a lot. But until you're familiar, till you've gained some familiarity with the differences, you may quite possibly mistake them.
They're not a predator like a bear.
No.
I can just go, look what made a mess of my garden.
Tore up all my rose bushes or whatever. An elk is unlikely to come into a yard and do something like that. However, a deer, it's very nocturnal, and it will come in at night and eat your rose bushes. And then when you wake up in the morning, your rose bushes are gone, and so is the deer.
I mean, they take it down to the soil?
Oh, no, not as a general rule. But
so it'll come back.
It'll come back, and they'll eat those parts that they like.
Or probably the pretty parts.
Usually. They're easily most easily digestible.
Now, are mule deer and other deer, well, you said the mule deer aren't going to come up to my land, but the deer might. Is there a somewhat attractive, affordable way to keep the deer away from my roses?
Best thing to do is not to have shrubbery that they prefer to eat. There's a lot of deer-proof kind of species that they don't like to eat. However, if you're planting a lot of things like mountain mahogany or rose bushes or some of these species that are commonly used in xeriscaping and used in yards here, they do like a lot of those.
Will they get over a 4-foot decorative fence? You know, an adobe wall?
As a general rule, no, but they can. I mean, a deer can jump 6 feet easily.
Wow.
But they don't really want to most of the time. And something as insignificant as a 4-foot fence is generally going to stop most of them unless they're super persistent.
Sure. Coyotes are not unusual?
Coyotes are very common.
And do we have any problem with them?
Problem is, once again,
my dog.
Problem is relative to you and your perception.
Well, are they going to come within my defined residential area and make me unhappy if I don't have garbage out?
Right. They're dangerous to your cats and your little dogs. Even a larger dog, a bunch of coyotes, a group of coyotes can be dangerous to a larger dog, Labrador sized or so. If
the Labrador is unattended?
Out by itself.
All right, but if it's with me, they're not going to come?
No guarantees on that, but they're much less likely to. And once again, the dog should be on a leash. If you have the dog on a leash, it's not a problem. Dogs wandering out by themselves, wandering out into the more wooded areas, those wilder areas, there's definitely a danger from groups of coyotes to that dog. And the coyotes are seeing that dog as a competitor. Just like they would to another coyote, they're going to run it off and potentially even kill it.
I've only seen kind of the tail end of a coyote going down a road at night. Maybe I just haven't been out and about enough, but I haven't seen a coyote during the day or more than one coyote at a time.
Yeah, at this time of year, coyotes are very, this being the summer, coyotes are very, you'll see a male or a female, they generally have puppies somewhere, and so they're out trying to bring back food for those pups. In the winter time, you tend to find more groups of coyotes, which are generally a family group. It's mom and dad plus last year's cubs and pups, and sometimes a pup or two from prior years.
And is it fair to say that for all of the animals we have spoken about and probably will speak about today, none of these should become pets?
No wildlife should ever become a pet. They're,
or even they're wild, friends.
Or even really good friends, right? Because people love to see them, and I can understand this, they'll feed wildlife, which there are some laws against feeding wildlife. I wish there were stronger ones and they were more rigorously applied at all times, because any animal that you feed gets used to it. Any animal that you feed and that gets used to it, you're giving it a couple steps up from the wild condition.
Right.
And it's going to be more productive. It's going to make more. They also become dependent upon anything that we give them, meaning that they're going to stick around. And whether you may like that gray fox that you're feeding that is pretty and it brings its puppies in occasionally, sure, when it has puppies, the neighbor's not going to, because the neighbor has chickens and the gray fox really, really likes chickens.
The neighbor had chickens.
Yeah.
All right, so regardless of any of the really cute shows you see on TV where people will have bears they've met in the wild and trained from a cub, that's TV. Do not try this at home.
It's TV, and it's bad TV in a lot of cases. I when I see those semi-tame kind of bears, it just eventually that person is going to become a statistic as far as a bear attack.
Oh yeah, they end up on YouTube. If I have chickens, is there any way to safely keep them alive?
Electric fencing.
Really?
Yeah, electric fencing. There's really good, even solar charging battery packs for a dispersed chicken coop out at the far side of the yard. But electric fencing is really effective at keeping bears, coyotes, bobcats, foxes out. You have to have the fence wires that are close enough together that it'll keep all those smaller things out. Pretty effective with cougars, although a cougar can jump a long ways, and if they want to get over an 8-foot fence, they never have to touch any electricity. They're probably not going to once they get that shock in the nose, though.
Right.
But so, electric fencing is great. It's great for fruit trees. It's great for chickens. It's great for compost piles, can be an attractant for bears and raccoons and things.
Have you found through your experience, Rick, working for the state, the Fish and Game, that homeowners associations don't like them because they're ugly, or they're afraid little children are going to walk into them? I mean, I don't know.
Homeowners associations don't like anything, as far as I can tell. They don't like chickens. They don't like landscaping contrary to their way of doing things, or anything different from the rest of the community. My argument in that case would be, like, if you allow chickens, you should be able to allow a way to protect the chickens. And chickens have sort of become, in a lot of the West, for black bears and further north where there's grizzly bears up in the Yellowstone ecosystem, chickens have become kind of the new garbage. A lot of people have these little hobby 2 or 3 or 4 chickens. Sure. I have 3 chickens. And
I think the town of Bernalillo has before the city council, or it's going to be, to allow people within the town limit to have, I don't know, a chicken or two.
To keep a few chickens as long as they're not roosters, kind of thing. That's usually how it works, because I don't want a rooster anywhere near me.
I don't know roosters that well. Are they?
They're loud.
Okay.
They cock-a-doodle-doo at ridiculous times of the night and the morning.
Yeah, I did live in a place where there were roosters in the general area, and they went off all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's not just at dawn.
And if you did cock-a-doodle-doo loud enough, you could start the whole town going.
Yep, that's
loads
true.
Of fun after a couple of beers.
Yeah, of course. Lots of things are.
good point, but that's a different program. Some of these smaller animals, the bobcats and the rabbits, and I don't know.
Bobcats are pretty good sized, really. I mean, they're mid-sized.
But they may not be smart enough to know the cross when the light is green.
Oh, no.
So,
yeah, exactly.
So if we run across something that used to be an animal, used to be a living animal, do we get out our shovel and throw it in the bushes, or call you or somebody?
The New Mexico Department of Transportation is the agency that deals with that kind of thing.
Okay.
it's dangerous to get out in the road and try and remove something unless you have an appropriate situation, flashing lights and all of that. And you could very easily get hit. So I would say no as a general rule.
But should it be reported?
You can call Game and Fish. Certainly in the case of a bear or a cougar or a mule deer or something like that, we want to know about it and we want to be able to deal with it.
What about roadkill? Is it important to remove that to stop attracting other animals?
Always a good question. It's dangerous, frankly, to
not us, but to call.
Oh yeah, call the Department of Transportation.
The Roadkill Cafe.
Yeah, and it is any of those things that are out on the road that are attractive to other critters that are going to come eat it are dangerous because they make an attractant that other things are going to come to. There's going to be vultures. There's going to be ground squirrels eat their friends out there when they're dried up jerky on the road. And so you unfortunately get, like, from every one of these dead creatures on the road, you may attract and kill more creatures. And so in that case, I think they should be removed from the road and at least thrown off into the bar ditch.
Okay. So report it to Department of Transportation.
Department of Transportation know, and they can take care of it.
Don't call the Fish and Game.
Well,
don't call Rick.
If it's any game species, primarily we're looking at in the local area at any of the fur bearers, with the exception of coyotes, but a bobcat, a bear, a cougar, a deer, we want to know about it, and we'd like to at least get records.
Well, yeah, certainly if something is between 2 and 1,000 pounds, you need to get out of the road.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. So the coyotes, just kind of leave them alone. Don't keep your animals off a leash.
Yeah, and avoid attracting them to the yard. Ways to avoid coyotes, bobcats, foxes, having them come to your yard is to avoid attracting the smaller things that they eat. So if you feed the birds, and a lot of people do, I feed the birds, they don't need to be fed in the summertime. There's plenty of natural food out there. However, if you want to do it, make sure that you only put out enough on a daily basis that they'll eat it all, and they don't spill it all over the ground. They spill it on the ground, and the rabbits and the mice come in at night to eat it. The rabbits and the mice attract bobcats and foxes and coyotes.
Yet another example where I have to be a responsible adult and not be lazy. I have to fill my bird feeder daily. I can add that to my daily list of things to do.
Yeah.
If I don't want to have a lot, maybe I don't mind having all that wildlife.
And you may not.
Are there people like that?
Oh, yes, certainly. And
here, bear. Come here, bear.
Yeah, that's illegal. B, it's dangerous. And once you have, and what I like to tell a person in a situation like that, if they've been continuously attracting a bear by doing something ridiculous, they complain when I come to remove that bear, which I may have to kill. And if it's a male bear, I'm almost certainly going to have to kill it because they're potentially more dangerous. I'll let them know that they just killed that bear. I'm not afraid to do that, and I want them to know that they have directly contributed to Game and Fish or myself having to destroy that animal.
Well, I'm pretty certain, having known you for an hour, that you would let me know in no uncertain terms that I'm the one who killed that animal.
Yeah, and it makes people very upset when they hear that, by the way.
Well, maybe they'll learn.
That's my sincere hope.
Good. Speaking of that, does Fish and Game have any formalized living with wildlife classes or videos or handouts?
We don't have classes. We have a number of brochures. We have one called Living with Large Predators that has a lot of information about living with bears, with mountain lions, with coyotes, and with bobcats. And it's sort of what to do when you either live in the country that these animals live in and or out recreating, camping, hiking, things like that. There's a Living with Raccoons brochure. Raccoons, not so much in Placidas. There's a few here, but down anywhere along the Bosque, they can be a giant issue for people living in areas with a lot of water or up in the Sandias.
They're so smart and they're so dexterous.
And they're so awful.
Yeah. Well, don't hold back, Rick. I know we were going down the animal size scale,
right,
but I want to take a quantum leap backwards to horses. They may not be considered wildlife, but
they're not wildlife. They're feral.
Okay. Well, but some people are equestrians. They keep horses.
Oh, right.
Are there any wildlife threats to people who have horses?
I wouldn't say there's wildlife threats, although that with some caveats. Horses are pretty high strung. If a bear gets into your quarter acre paddock where your horse is, the horse is going to panic. The bear's not there to eat the horse. The bear's probably there to eat the sweet feed or the grain that you fed the horse.
Okay.
Because the grain, once again, is just like birdseed. Huge number of calories, really easily acquired. This is a very big attractant to a bear. And if it's molasses, oats with molasses on them, sweet feed kind of thing, it's really attractive to a bear. Any of that sweet anything is extremely attractive.
So the horses go to its corner, let the bear do its thing, and
horses tend to panic, and they run themselves into fences, and they freak out, and they get themselves all cut up by hitting the barbed wire and corners and things like that. So that's where the problem lies.
So what do I do? Only put out enough sweet feed for the day, like I do with the bird seed?
Once again, yeah, not even for the day. I would say just a small amount. Whatever, and horses can't. If they eat too much of that really hot burning kind of food, they need to be exercised a lot. Right. Anyway, so
then store it.
Yeah, and this should be stored in a safe place.
So whether it's dog food or sweet treat for
any pet foods, yes.
What's considered good storage? A regular old plastic trash can with a loose-fitting lid, I don't think that's going to work.
No, it should really be stored in something that's bear-resistant or bear-proof. A metal storage container, a firmly constructed outbuilding with a door that can be locked with
You're talking about Al Capone's safe that Geraldo opened? Or
that may be a little bit too much. No, any kind of firm storage. If you had a metal trash can that's got latches that a bear can't undo, and a bear can undo some crazy things. So
right.
There are bear-resistant containers that you can – Davis Hardware up in Cedar Crest has bear-resistant trash cans that you can buy that you can store things in.
Hello, Amazon.
Amazon has a lot of bear-resistant stuff. Do they really? Stuff. Oh, yes. You look up bear-resistant containers. There's hundreds of them.
As soon as we get done with this, I'm going to do that. All right. Staying on the storage issue, I have a more, hypothetically speaking, I have a more modern home. I have a garage door that is designed to hopefully keep the pack rats out. But it's not smell tight. So can I keep my sweet treats for my horses and or my dog food in the garage, or is the bear going to come through that garage door? Though it's Miami-Dade certified.
There are no guarantees in life. I've seen pictures.
That sounds like no to me.
Yeah. I've seen pictures of where bears have gone through garage doors. It's not something that I am familiar with having occurred here in New Mexico. However, I have seen where garbage storage containers made out of plywood and with hasps and locks and things like that have been torn open, even in the Sandias, from bears. It's not very common. They're not, especially in a place like Placidas, because there are so many people around, a bear is going to be pretty nervous. It's not going to want to stick one place for long. Now, if it smells like, if you've got a whole garbage or your whole garage is filled with garbage and it smells of all the wonderful things that a bear thinks garbage smells like, yeah, that's a problem. But then you're not going to want to live in the house. It's going to smell inside, too.
All right, let's go to the other part of the house. I have I built one of these nice new outdoor kitchens, or I have my $2,000 green egg, which I think is crazy. But I do. I have some facility for cooking outside, and it's all that stuff that stays on the grill that is delicious. Do I have to move my grill into the house at night?
I would suggest, if you live in a place like Placidas, that you actually store your grill in the garage or in an outbuilding that's firmly constructed and, behind a latch that a bear can't open. A bear can't do a doorknob. However, those flap latches that a lot of people have, they learn those real quick because they just hit it, it opens the door.
I think I'm going to leave a Rubik's Cube out there and see what happens.
But what most people could do that would help them a lot with their barbecue? After you're done cooking, keep that sucker hot for a couple more minutes and burn off all that delicious smelling grease. It's always going to smell like food. It's a barbecue grill.
Right.
But if you heat it up so much that it charcoalizes all that stuff, when the bear does go investigate it, it's not going to find anything, and it's not going to be that interested.
Well, that's a good point. Well, I mean, being the consummate griller, I always do that. But to kill or to it's a lot easier to take the wire brush after it's been carbonized.
Yeah, exactly. And I do the same thing.
There you go. I knew we were both smart.
Debatable.
Well, relative. It's my fantasy, Rick. let's go smaller. Rattlesnakes. Let's go with rattlesnakes.
Boy, rattlesnakes are fun. You live in rattlesnake country, and anywhere up on the mountain, you're probably not going to find them. But anywhere in between here and the border of the state,
right?
And past the border in all four directions, five directions.
But are they always going to warn me?
Not necessarily. I mean, if particularly on like a cold morning when it's not cold, wet morning, once the monsoon starts and you wake up and it's only 50 degrees, and the rattlesnake that was so happy yesterday evening before it started raining, he's cold and he doesn't move fast. However, if you step on him, you're probably going to get bit. But
unless I step on his head.
Yeah, unless you step on his head. But I snakes are great to have around. All those little mice and rats that attract the coyotes and the bobcats and things like that, the rattlesnake's there to eat. He's not there to bother you.
Right.
But there's nothing you can do to avoid having snakes in the area except not having any attractants. Once again, if you don't have anything feeding the little critters that the snake wants to eat, which is basically mice, rats, rabbits,
right,
in the case of the bigger diamondbacks, there's probably not going to be snakes.
But you remove, as some of the people on the planet have learned, if you remove anything in the food chain, crazy things can happen, and usually not good things.
Yeah,
I guess that's the basis of about 800 different movies,
right?
I have been told not to walk the arroyos because that's where rattlesnakes like to live.
So the arroyo thing is funny. What I always enjoy hearing that.
I'm here to amuse you. Right?
What you have going on in the arroyos is you have softer soils generally in the arroyos, sure, and the gophers can dig in the softer soils more easily, and the rattlesnakes really like gophers. And so there's rattlesnakes after the gophers in the arroyos versus in the arroyos themselves. It's a generalization in any case, you know?
Well, that's interesting that you brought that up, because in all the time I did preparing for this, and I never even came across the word gopher. Is that yet another little friend we need to?
Yeah, it's another little friend. If you garden for any length of time in this area, you're going to find out about gophers.
Is there a way to deter them without... Wow. Poisoning the whole aquifer.
Yeah, you don't want to poison the aquifer. The gophers, you know, they should be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. But when they move in and you get a plague of gophers, and gophers are boom and bust. A lot of these little critters like mice and rats and rabbits and gophers, when food conditions are good, there's a lot more than when food conditions are bad.
Sure.
So, you know, they tend to, all of a sudden you'll have a year when you can't grow a darn thing because the gophers are chewing it up at the roots. And then the next year there's no gophers at all.
Well, maybe I need to go collect some rattlesnakes and put them there where the gophers are.
That's a pretty effective way of doing it. However, you will have to deal with the rattlesnakes then.
Rats, pack rats.
Pack rats, kangaroo rats.
They're all cousins?
Yeah, they're all different rodents, you know, different families and whatnot, and that have different lifestyles, but they're all around.
And I guess regular rabbits make holes in the land too.
Our rabbits are not big diggers, but they'll use other animals' holes.
Well, that's kind of like the hermit crab.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when the original resident comes home, or do they end up on, you know, extreme TV or?
No, not necessarily. Rabbits are bigger than most of the other smaller rodents. They take over the burrow, and the smaller rodent they're built for digging, and they'll just dig another hole. And if they're down, a rattlesnake in particular, going down hunting those other rodents that live there, it goes into the hole looking for other things to eat, and it might spend the night or a week.
In Placitas, in the surrounding area, are there any endangered species?
There's certainly some that can come through, mostly smaller birds that most people aren't even going to recognize as an issue. Vireos and some of the gray-headed vireos and things like that that live in pinyon juniper woodlands. The best thing you can do for wildlife, really, the worst enemy to wildlife that we have anywhere in where humans are is your little domestic kitty cat. They eat millions of rodents and lizards and little birds and big birds in some cases on an annual basis. Your cat should not be outside, as far as I'm concerned. It should be inside. And I break this rule every day with our dumb cat.
It sounds like cats would be a tasty treat, though.
Or, yeah, but if you have a securely fenced yard, it's really not that much of an issue as long as the cat stays in the yard, mm-hmm. and a smart cat does. I have a third of an acre. The cat pretty much stays in the yard.
Oh, yeah.
But it also is out there murdering its way through the little critters.
But look what you save on cat food.
They don't eat it is the problem. Oh. They can go kill these things, and they do it as a sport. And then they come back, eat their dry food and their Frisky's buffet or whatever. And
well, they're hungry. They've been out working.
Yeah, they're hungry. They've been out killing.
Yeah. It's interesting that you think your cat is out there killing, but when we sport hunt, you don't feel that's killing.
I still feel it's killing, but I'm actually using it, whereas my dumb cat's just killing lizards because it's that's a cat.
But and speaking of hunting, which is huge. I mean, people love it.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best game animal in this area?
Wow, that's a tough question. I'm a big elk hunter. I really like elk hunting. I also like hunting deer.
Do you like the elk meat better than
I actually really like deer meat. Some people prefer elk to deer. Elk tends to be more mild.
You put enough garlic and butter on it.
Yeah, you can.
What about bear?
You can cover. I like bear meat. As long as it hasn't been eating a bunch of garbage and weird human provided things. Or I've eaten some bear that was eating salmon runs from up in Northern California, and it was not so good.
Well, and along those lines, if you have a rabbit that's running around downtown Albuquerque, and you trap it and you eat it. I wouldn't think it would be advisable because of all the junk it's going to eat. But what about all the free-range rabbits here or anything else? What can I trap in my zombie apocalypse here? You know, there is no Merck. There is no Albertsons. I need to eat off the land. What should I be going for? And what should I absolutely avoid?
Yeah, let's be completely honest. You can eat pretty much anything. If it's out there, you can eat it. You can eat bugs. They're not going to hurt you.
Well, that's true.
Just not, I know, very grubs attractive to eat.
I think Hoffenpfeffer is a lot better than
rabbit's
grubs.
Good. There's some kind of rules about rabbit. Rabbits carry a lot of diseases. So do a lot of the rodents. In the wintertime, they carry a lot less diseases. So that would be a better time to get a rabbit or a ground squirrel or something like that. That some of those fleas and ticks and things like that carry all the unfortunate diseases that they may carry, are gone in the wintertime. You know, we're talking after the first couple hard freezes.
Right. What about if I safely trap a couple of bunnies? Do we have different varieties here? And there's particularly what I'm looking for? And then I can breed them at home so I know what they're eating.
You shouldn't ever trap any wildlife for the purpose of raising it. Once again, you know, we mentioned as having wildlife as pets, that would be the same thing, essentially.
Well, this is survival. This is...
zombie apocalypse? Well, it's completely theoretical.
Of course. I hope. Something happens.
Yeah, cottontail rabbits, there's a lot of them around. I wouldn't even see a need to breed them. There's just so many, and with a BB gun, you could get them.
Well, the only reason I think that I would ever consider breeding them is if 5,000 people in Placidus are all going after them now because there's no other source of food.
Yeah, then you...
I have heard, again, urban legend or whatever, that the rabbits around here, you should not eat for one reason or another.
They carry tularemia.
Tularemia.
Yeah, which is the rabbit fever, spring fever. It's naturally within the population. Our rabbits go through big boom and bust cycles. Some years there'll be a ton of bunnies. The next year there might not be any, and it's because they're carrying tularemia. Tularemia is something that people can get. You don't want to. And it can be gotten from handling or eating undercooked rabbit.
So if I cook it?
If you cook it adequately, it should be fine. However, you can get tularemia even from handling the rabbit meat. But that's because you licked your finger after having this dismembered bunny in your hands.
I might do that with chocolate frosting, but I don't think I'm going to do that with raw bunny. Well, that's good to know. If for some reason people are living on some rabbits now, what would be the symptoms of tularemia?
I don't know. I'm not enough of a disease specialist.
But you're probably going to die.
I, I, It can kill. It's actually not that commonly fatal, but it does kill people. I mean, anybody with a compromised immune system is always more in danger from right. catching things like that and then having a worse thing. I think for most people, it's you get a basically bad flu symptoms kind okay. of thing.
So we just need to add that to our list. Eating raw eggs and undercooked seafood and undercooked rabbit from Placidus is harmful to your health.
Undercooked or you know, rabbit. And also that's that waiting until after the first couple hard frosts, because that tends to kill whatever little bug it is that carries the tularemia or in between bunnies and from
right.
the bunnies.
You can't watch a Western without somebody eating a rattlesnake. You know, they kill it. They you know, I don't know, somehow the skin just peels off magically.
Yeah.
You put it on a stick over the open spit and it's, man, that's good eating. Is that true?
I've eaten rattlesnake. It does not taste like chicken.
Okay.
It tastes like rattlesnake.
And is that good?
It's not horrible, but it's not the kind of thing I'm going to recommend.
I guess it depends how hungry you are.
It really does.
If you had to choose between rattlesnake and rabbit.
I'd eat rabbit every day.
Okay. Well, that is probably the most important thing that we've learned here today. Is there a message from our friends at the New Mexico
Department of Game and Fish.
The Department of Game and Fish. I've been saying fish and game. Something that we all should know here is Placetans or just residents?
Yeah, you know, you have a lot of wildlife. You have a lot of potential for wildlife in the area. Enjoy it. You know, it's neat to see. It's part of the reason for living here. If you don't want to have issues with wildlife, the more sterile your yard is, the less likely you are to have problems. If you have fruit trees and things like that, you can avoid some problems by picking fruit as it ripens or right before it's ripe. Certainly don't let it fall to the ground and ripen. That's almost it's an invitation for bears and deer. They really like fallen apples too.
How do they feel about nut trees or drupe trees?
Oh, yeah, all of those are very attractive to bears. I mean, all the plums and pear.
Well, I mean, pecans and walnuts.
Very good eating.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, bears love all those things.
It's that hard shell. And
they don't care. They crunch them up, and they're very dexterous eaters. They can digest a lot of things that we would never want to put through our bodies, first
You're
of all.
You're not kidding. Walnut shells?
Yeah, semi-digested. They crunch them up, and they spit the big hard shells out, but all those internal shells, they pass through, they adjust, they digest the nuts out of the middle of it.
Speaking of passing through, if for some reason, large animals have overnighted, stayed at Casa Bronson and forgot to flush, should I remove the scat? Does that attract more animals or... Should I put it in my garden as a good fertilizer?
I wouldn't think. Actually, it's probably going to have a bunch of weed seeds in it, so I wouldn't put it in your garden. But, it's not really an attractant other than if you have a really abundant food supply, that mostly digested pile of bear scat is going to advertise that there's some potential food there.
Okay.
And another bear may stumble across that, and then all of a sudden it's going to know that there's something to eat.
I'm going to get on Bear TripAdvisor.
Right.
Anything I've missed?
I can't think of anything. It seems like we've covered a lot.
Can I have a vegetable garden and fruit
certainly,
trees?
Certainly, certainly. And
don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. If you don't want to have any issues, those electric fences I mentioned, if you can plug it into the house, that's great. It works all the time. You don't have to worry about a few stormy days or something running down a battery from a solar charged unit. And electric fences are not expensive to run. That amount of electricity that they use, which is just kind of circulating through, doesn't really take a lot of juice.
And it won't hurt me.
And it won't hurt you. Well, it's going to hurt, which is why it works so well on the wildlife. But it's not the kind of thing that is going to hurt you a lot.
All right. I'm not going to end up with a dead dog.
No. But your dog isn't going to get near that fence again.
Okay. So was it similar to those fences they use for dogs?
Yeah. Except most of those are based because the dog has a collar, and the dog gets near to the boundary, and then it shocks it. Whereas we're talking a bare wire fence for wildlife.
Right. And in a few, if you're looking for that way of protecting your investment of your radishes or whatever,
right?
And you shop for an electric fence, I'm pretty sure they're going to be rated for residential use.
Oh yeah,
versus for commercial use.
I'm certainly. the stronger ones are, of course, going to be more effective, particularly on more persistent wildlife, a bear or something like that. But they are really effective for keeping bears and or other any other wildlife, you know, of a size that would be affected. A rabbit's going right under. But although there are net fences that can be electrified that'll keep rabbits out even. But
does anybody get all panties in a wad over this? Is that, you know, environmentalists?
I wouldn't think so.
Oh, it's so cruel. They're fine.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. And I think that would be a ridiculous viewpoint because you're avoiding having to maybe do something a little more destructive to the animal. You're not hurting anything.
Right.
It's going to get that one shock on its nose and it's not coming back.
To that point, even though I thought we were wrapping up, you made me think of something else. You know, because we're talking about driving the animals away. Lots of people have firearms, guns, mm-hmm. rifles, whatever. Don't shoot a bear in your driveway.
No, don't shoot a bear.
Don't shoot any of that stuff.
No, and
it's only going to piss them off.
Yeah, I mean, if the bear is literally attacking you, you can, or it's attacking your chickens or whatever, you could shoot it. But as a general rule, the best thing to do is to call the appropriate agency, which would be Game and Fish, or you know the local sheriff's department, who will generally contact us.
Right, but then it's all over, isn't it?
Not really, no. Yeah. I mean, it's whatever is causing the problem, the attractant in the first place is quite possibly could be repeated.
What happens if I turn a hose on a bobcat in my patio?
It's probably going to run.
Okay.
Not towards you, okay. No. It's probably going to run. You know, bobcats having kittens in under people's porches is really common here and even in the northeast part of Albuquerque.
And they need to be taken away. They are not going to be the new family pet.
Well, they don't need to be taken away. They'll go away on their own once the kittens are able to. But, you know, we've provided them a great spot to have kittens. I'd keep the dog away from them because the dog's probably going to get scratched up pretty good.
Okay. And dogs probably don't know enough to stay away. I want to play.
Yeah.
Well, Rick, again, thank you for coming down from the way up there in the north of Santa Fe. And we have been talking about living with our four-legged and, I guess, no-legged, if we're talking about rattlesnakes, here in the Placidas area specifically. So for Conversations with Matthew Bronson, thank you. KUPR 99.9 FM in Placidas, New Mexico. Thank you. Thank you, Rick.